Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Leviticus chapter 2. We're going to talk about the grain offering in this chapter. Our context is this. In the first chapter, we learned all about the burnt offering. And so now we start with Leviticus chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Now, when anyone presents a grain offering as an offering to the Lord, his offering shall be of fine flour, and he shall pour oil on it and put frankincense on it. He shall then bring it to Aaron's sons, the priest, and shall take from it his handful of its fine flour and of its oil with all of its frankincense. And the priest shall offer it up in smoke as its memorial portion on the altar, an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to the Lord. Now, this is the grain offering, and this is a complicated chapter. So we can start off by giving a sort of an overview first. There's some basic distinctions that need to be made. First of all, a grain offered could either be offered by the priest himself for himself or by a common offeror for the offeror's offering. So that's one distinction we need to make. Another distinction we need to make is that the grain offering could either be raw or cooked at the option of the offeror. And if it was cooked, it could be cooked in an oven, it could be cooked on a griddle, or could be cooked on a pan or in a pan. Now, to summarize a little bit more, I'm going to use a table from the NIV Study Bible. What are the elements of the grain offering? Well, of course, it's grain, and that grain could either be barley or wheat, depending on what was available. The grain was then ground into fine flour. In fact, most of the commentators that I've read say that it's not an option of grain or fine flour, is the grain must be ground into fine flour. And then olive oil and incense is placed on the flour. Now, what if the grain offering is not raw but cooked? It's either cooked into cakes or wafers. There's always salt accompanying the grain offering. There's no yeast or honey. And the grain offering was offered in connection with a burnt offering or a peace offering or a sin offering. The purpose of the grain offering, it was a voluntary act of worship. Voluntary means it was a free will offering. It's not required. It was a recognition of God's goodness and provisions of the offeror's devotion to God. Now, we're going to divide the offering up into God's portion, the priest's portion, and the offeror's portion. First of all, let's start with an offering made by the priest for himself. In that case, the whole thing went up to God. There was nothing remaining. After the memorial portion went up in smoke to God, the rest of it was burned. In other words, the whole offering was burned on the offer. The priest didn't get anything. And of course, since the priest is the offeror, the common offeror, there was no common offeror. The priest was the offeror. So in that case, a grain offering for a priest, the whole thing went up to God. It all belonged to God. Now, most of grain offerings were done by common offerors. There would be a memorial portion, a handful of grain, a handful of flour that's thrown onto the altar, and that went up to God. That belonged to God. The memorial portion did. The rest of the grain flour mixed with oil, having incense, the rest of it went to the priest, and they ate the remainder of the grain offering in the courtyard as the remainder was cooked into cakes or wafers. The offeror, in that case, got nothing. So in neither situation, when the priest offered up the grain offering to God, God got it all. When a common offeror offered the grain offering up to the Lord, the Lord got some, the priest got the rest, the offeror got nothing. Now let's look at some other scriptures that describe the grain offering. Now this passage here in Leviticus 6, verses 14 through 23, this concerns ordinary offerors, not a priest who's offering up a grain offering for himself, but this is just for an ordinary Israelite. Now this is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall present it before the Lord in front of the altar. Then one of them shall lift up from it a handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil and all the incense that is on the grain offering, and he shall offer it up on smoke on the altar, a soothing aroma as his memorial offering to the Lord. All right, there's nothing complicated about that. We'll see that as we go through chapter 2 here. The memorial portion is a handful of flour mixed with oil, mixed with incense. It's burnt up on the altar. Verse 16, what is left of it, Aaron and his sons are to eat, because the remainder goes to the priest when a common Israelite is offering up the offering. It shall be eaten as unleavened cakes. Everything about the grain offering is unleavened. There is no leaven in any form, in any situation, is a grain offering offered up with leaven. They're to eat it in the court of the tent of meeting. It shall not be baked with leaven. I have given it as their share from my offerings from by fire. It is most holy. Most holy is a technical term. It means that if anything touches the bread off the grain offering, then that person or thing becomes holy and consecrated, and it cannot be used for profane purposes. Every male among the sons of Aaron may eat it. And that's talking about all the priests can eat it. Whoever touches the grain offering will become consecrated. That's because it's most holy. Verse 19, Leviticus 6, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is the offering which Aaron and his sons are to present to the Lord on the day when he is anointed. And that's talking about the consecration of the priest. They also had to offer up a grain offering then. All right, that's enough of Leviticus 6. Let's look at Leviticus 7, 9, and 10. Likewise, every grain offering that is baked in the oven and everything prepared in a pan or on a griddle shall belong to the priest who presents it. Remember, a little memorial portion goes on the altar, and the rest of it, once it's cooked into a cake or a wafer, it belongs to the priest. Every grain offering mixed with oil or dry shall belong to all the sons of Aaron, to all alike. Now here's some other characteristics of the grain offering. The grain could either be wheat or barley, depending on what was available. That's according to gotquestions.org. The grain offering could either be grain or fine flour. It was made of grain, which was ground into fine flour. And I presume it was fine flour because only the best for the Lord, fine flour. Now, whether the grain offering was a cooked or uncooked grain offering, that was optional, as gotquestions.org and Ligonier says. Now, if the grain offering was cooked, it was either cooked in the form of a cake or a wafer. A wafer's thin, cake is a little bit thicker. And it was cooked either in a pan or an oven or a griddle. We'll get into more detail about this later. The grain offering was the only bloodless offering of all the Levitical sacrifices. Grain was relatively scarce when Israel was wandering through the desert, so grain offerings were costly, precious. That represented the Israelites' complete dependence on God to provide daily needs. Now, as I said earlier, the grain offering accompanied the other three of the other main offerings, the burnt offering, the sin offering, and the peace offering. It did not accompany the guilt offering, the trespass offering. The burnt offering is described in Numbers. The grain offering accompanying the burnt offering is described in Numbers 28, verses 3 through 6. You shall say to them, this is the offering by fire which you shall offer to the Lord. Two male lambs, 1 year old, without defect, as a continual burnt offering every day. You shall offer the one lamb in the morning, another lamb you shall offer at twilight. That's the evening and morning sacrifice, which is a burnt offering. Also a tenth of an ephah of fine flour for a grain offering, mixed with a fourth of a hin of beaten oil. So there's your grain offering. Goes with the burnt offering. Also, the grain offering goes with the sin offering. Numbers 6, 14 through 15. He shall present his offering to the Lord, one male lamb a year old without defect for a burnt offering without defect, and one ewe lamb a year old without defect for a sin offering, and one ram without defect for a peace offering, and a basket of unleavened cakes of fine flour mixed with oil and unleavened wafers, spread with oil, along with their grain offering and their drink offering. So here you got a burnt offering, a sin offering, and a peace offering in number 6, all accompanied with a grain offering. Now, the grain offering accompanied a peace offering in Leviticus 9:4, and an ox and a ram for peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord, and a grain offering mixed with oil. So there you have grain offerings mixed with peace offerings. Also in number 6:17, I won't read it to save time, it's the same idea. So we see that all of the offerings were accompanied with a grain offering. Now, the amounts offered for the grain offering accompanying the burnt offering differed according to the type of animal sacrificed, according to the NIV Study Bible. However, gotquestions.org says no specific amount was required, so I don't know how to reconcile that. I'm guessing here that the amount of grain and a grain offering accompanying a burnt offering was fixed by Levitical law, but if you were making a free will offering of a grain offering, there was no specific amount required. Now, how was the grain offering offered? Well, there was a representative portion that was burned on the altar, the so-called memorial portion. Some translations have the token portion, but memorial portion is good. And then the balance, the remainder, was baked without leaven. Of course, no leaven is involved. And then the priests ate in their holy meals. Where did all this baking take place? It could not be outside the courtyard because the priests were supposed to eat it in the courtyard. And I asked myself, does this mean that the ovens and the fires necessary to cook all this bread, all this grain, were they in the courtyard? I suspect so. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the courtyard. And remember, the Levites are helping out with all this. The NIV Study Bible says that the cooked product, the cooked grain offering, was similar to pie crust. Now, what accompanied the grain? Of course, olive oil, which was mixed with the flour. There was salt, and then there was incense. And then people would eat that, and you wonder, well, what does that taste like to have incense in your bread? I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't bad. It wasn't enough to mess up the taste. The Hebrew word for grain offering, which is mincha, it can mean gift and is often used that way, to mean gift. So the purpose of this mincha, this grain offering, was to express gratitude to God, especially for the fruit of the soil, because bread came from grain. The grain offering was the fruit of the soil, because the soil grew the grain that was necessary for the offering. That's Adam Clark's idea. The Hebrew term for grain offering shows this, mincha. It's used elsewhere in the Old Testament as a tribute offered to a great king as a sign of thanksgiving. And so God uses the same ritual here in terms that people in the ancient Near East would be familiar with. You give grain to a king, it means we're thankful, O king, that you've bestowed us with your great favor. Likewise, you do it to God, you're being thankful to God for bestowing us your great favor, including our daily bread. As I said earlier, this was a voluntary free will offering. It was not required, except I think in cases of the fixed sacrifices, but if somebody was making a free will offering, he could just give the offering on his own. Now, the flour that was involved is called fine flour. That means it was milled and sifted. The grain was milled and sifted, either barley or wheat. So the grain offering was not just what God had created. It also contained the labor of the people. Likewise, the oil that was on the bread was made from olives. The olives had to be beaten into olive oil. So the offering consisted not just of things that God had made, but also things that required the labor of people, to show that the labor of the people was also consecrated to God. That fine flour was a requirement for all grain offerings, regardless of the form of the offering. Now, the oil that's mixed with the bread, Jameson Fawcett Brown say that's symbolic of the Holy Spirit, which I'm sure it is, because that's one of the simplest and most and the clearest metaphors in the Bible, or symbols in the Bible. The frankincense, the NIV has incense because frankincense was the chief ingredient of incense. That just makes the memorial portion as it's burned on the altar be a sweet savor that goes up to the Lord. So it's symbolic of, it's usually symbolic of the prayers of the saints. And it's a sweet smelling savor to the Lord. Now the memorial portion, that initial small portion of the grain offering that was placed on the altar and burnt, it symbolized that all the offering belonged to God, not just the first handful, but all of it did. And the worshiper was recognizing that God had a claim to all of it when he put that first handful on the altar. We go now to verse 3, Leviticus 2. The remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, a thing most holy of the offerings to the Lord by fire. So we're going to divide the grain offering into the memorial portion and the remainder. I'm going to call it the remainder. That's the part that goes to the priest when a common offerer is making his offering. Now, our first three verses here are mainly describing uncooked grain offerings. And so that makes me wonder here in verse 3, the remainder of the grain offering, does that mean flour and oil and incense mixed together, uncooked, belongs to the sons? I don't see why it couldn't be. It could be. It could be stored for future cooking and consumption. Or it could be it was cooked and given to the priest on the spot. As we go through verses 4 through 10, we will see the rules for cooked grain offerings, but 1 through 3 is for uncooked raw grain offerings. Once again, it says in verse 3 that the remainder of the grain offerings is a thing most holy. That means you touch the remainder and you are no longer you become holy and separated off from normal ordinary affairs, and you were separate. Again, that holy in its root meaning means separate from the world and dedicated to God. So it means that once something touches the grain offering, they become holy. That means they can't really leave the temple, the tabernacle. They can't get involved in profane and ordinary things. Now, since the remainder of the grain was holy, it means it could not be eaten without the temple courtyard. You couldn't take it home and eat it like an ordinary meal. It had to stay in the temple courtyard. Leviticus 6:16 says, what is left of it, that's the remainder of the grain offering, Aaron and his sons are to eat. It shall be eaten as unleavened cakes in a holy place. They are to eat it in the court of the tent of meeting, where it's still holy. Again, the whole idea of Leviticus is to separate out the holy from the profane. The holy is that which is dedicated to God and separated from the world. We go down to Leviticus chapter 2, verses 4 through 7. Now, when you bring an offering of a grain offering baked in an oven, it shall be unleavened cakes of fine flour mixed with oil, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. If your offering is a grain offering made on the griddle, it should be of fine flour, unleavened mixed with oil. You shall break it into bits and pour oil on it. It is a grain offering. Now, if your offering is a grain offering made in a pan, it shall be made of fine flour with oil. Now, here we have three different methods of cooking the grain offering in case the offeror chose to have it cooked. And these three different methods are three different options on how it's to be cooked. So there's a lot of leeway here. And my speculation is that God just used the three common methods of cooking that the Israelites used and said you can use any of these three that you want. I don't think he was trying to make any point about any. I don't think there was any symbolic significance concerning whether the bread, the flour was cooked on a griddle or in a pan or in an oven. I don't think that makes a hill of beans a difference. But he was just accommodating the Israelites so they could have various ways of offering their grain offerings. Now, what was an oven? It was usually a circular hole dug in the floor from 1 to 5 feet deep, the sides of that hole were covered with hardened plaster, so they would start the fire down there in the hole and then heat up the hole, maybe cover the top. There's your oven. That's from John Gill. All of these grain offerings were unleavened. We're going to talk about why in just a minute. But notice that the bread is unleavened just like at the Passover meal. Exodus 12:8, they shall eat the flesh that same night, roasted with fire, and they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Remember, the unleavened bread symbolized the haste with which the Israelites left Egypt. They didn't have time to leaven their bread. Now notice in these verses 4 through 7 that regardless of how the offering is cooked, oven, griddle, or pan, regardless of that, it's always fine flour mixed with oil. Fine flour mixed with oil. And of course, it had incense and salt added to it also, as we'll see from other verses. All right, I just told you what an oven was, the holding ground with plaster around the hole. How about a griddle? This is a flat plate. Apparently, the Bedouins still use this plate even to this day, iron plate, convex iron plate. They put dough on top and fry it. If the grain offering was cooked on a griddle, it was chopped into bits, and I could not find any reason why that would be done. I did find some commentaries that said, like Kyle and Dellich said, that this is the way it's normally eaten by Bedouins in the Middle East, and they just assumed that the habits, the customs of cooking passed on for 3,000 plus years, and I guess that's reasonable. But this is my speculation, because the flour and the oil had to be thick on the griddle, otherwise the dough would just run off the flat griddle, so it had to be stacked up high, have enough consistency there to stick on the griddle without running off. And if you have thick dough, that makes it harder to cook and harder to eat. So you break it up, it's easier to eat it. I don't know, though, because I'm not exactly sure how this worked. This is just my speculation. Here's what Ellicott says about these bits on the griddle. Quote, bread broken in pieces and steeped in oil, butter, milk, or sweet juices still constitutes a favorite dish among the Bedouin Arabs. All right, so we've covered the oven, we've covered the griddle, now pan. That's the third of the cooking instruments. What's the difference between the pan and the griddle mentioned in verse 5? Well, the pan has a cover. The griddle doesn't, according to Gill in the Cambridge Commentary. The pan is deep and the griddle is flat. Now, it's not mentioned what the form of the bread was in that pan. Was it a cake? Was it a wafer? It's one of the two. Sorry, it's not bits, I don't think. It's one of the two cakes. Or wafer, wafer's thin, cake's thicker. That's the only difference. I imagine it could be a cake because it's in a pan. It's thick. Griddle would be, well, a pan could probably be a wafer or a cake, just depending on how thick the dough is spread at the bottom. And I imagine that's true of an oven, too. You could cook it as a cake or you could cook it as a wafer. Now, the pan in verse 7, it doesn't say that the flour and oil had to be, that the bread cooked with the flour and the oil had to be unleavened bread. It doesn't say so. But it does. The verse is not explicit, but verse 11 takes care of it, because Leviticus chapter 2, verse 11 says this, no grain offering that you present to the Lord is to be made with yeast or leaven, for you are not to burn any yeast or honey as a food offering to the Lord. Okay, there it is. No grain offering. That means all of them. No leaven. So we go down to Leviticus 2, verses 8 through 10. When you bring in the grain offering, which is made of these things, to the Lord, it shall be presented to the priest, and he shall bring it to the altar. The priest then shall take up from the grain offering its memorial portion, and shall offer it up in smoke on the altar as an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to the Lord. The remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, the thing most holy of the offerings to the Lord by fire. Now verse 8 says, when you bring in the grain offering, that sounds like the offeror himself brought the grain offering to the priest, and then the priest went ahead and put the memorial portion on the altar and presented it to the Lord. This is Adam Clark's view. It says the grain offering is brought to the Lord. It doesn't say the priest explicitly. That's one option is what is meant here. But it could mean when the grain offering is brought to the tabernacle. Maybe a Levite picked it up and then handed it to a priest. I think the priest probably took it directly. That's just my guess. He should bring it to the altar. Of course, that's the bronze altar in the courtyard in the front of the doorway of the tabernacle. John Gill says more precisely, that it was at the southwest horn of the altar that the bread is brought to the priest. And I have no idea how Gill knows that. He reads a lot of rabbinic literature. That's probably how he knows it. Verse 10 says, the remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, to all of them together. John Gill says that this means the high priest took his part first, and then the common priest took their portions next. And I think that's probably reasonable, even though it doesn't actually say that. You would naturally give honor to the high priest. We go now to Leviticus 2, verses 11 through 12. No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall not offer up in smoke any leaven or any honey as an offering by fire to the Lord. As an offering of first fruits, you shall bring them to the Lord, but they shall not ascend for a soothing aroma on the altar. First of all, why was honey forbidden in the grain offering? Well, we'll give you some possible reasons for that. Option number one, honey speeds up the leavening process. For example, honey is used in brewing beer, as the NIV Study Bible says. The honey is used as an aid to fermentation, the aid to leavening of the bread. And since leavening stands for evil in this case, well, we don't want honey to increase the amount of evil that's being made in our offering. Why does leaven stand for evil? Because leavening produces decomposition in the bread. It's an evidence of the decay of sin, as sin decomposes our persons. And the honey sped up the leavening process, so if leavening is bad, then the honey is bad also. Well, that's the first option, why honey was not allowed, because it sped up the leavening process. The second option is this. Honey was used in Canaanite cults, the NIV Study Bible says, and God wanted to keep the Israelites separate from that, and so that's why they could use honey. Option number three, the honey was apt to create acid when mixed with the flour. This is Adam Clark. He says this, honey is, quote, apt to gripe and prove purgative. In other words, the honey will make your stomach clench up like when you've got food poisoning, and it will prove purgative. It'll make you have diarrhea and empty your bowels. So let's don't put honey in the bread. Whew. If Clark is right about that, then that's obvious why you wouldn't want to put honey in the bread. But it's one of those three reasons. Speed up the leavening process. It was used in covenant Canaanite cult, so it created acid and bad results when it was eaten. For whatever reason, honey was not allowed. Now, honey was allowed if it was offered with first fruits. I'm not going to talk about first fruits too much because we're going to hit that later. But it is mentioned here, kind of like an aside, as an offering of first fruits. This is verse 12 of Leviticus 2. As an offering of first fruits, you shall bring them to the Lord. The them there, I assume, is the grain offering. So as an offering of first fruits, you shall bring the cakes of grain offering to the Lord. But they shall not ascend for a soothing aroma on the altar. So some grain offerings were not burnt, and those were the grain offerings that were offered in connection with first fruits. Now, first fruits is a big deal. Let me run through these verses real quick here to show you how often first fruits are mentioned. Leviticus 23:10-11, when you enter the land, you shall bring in the feast of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. Exodus 23, verses 16 and 17. Also, you shall observe the feast of the harvest of the first fruits of your labors. So that's the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of the Wheat Harvest. They had to take the wheat and bake it into two loaves to offer as first fruits. Now, in that particular case, interestingly enough, leaven was allowed. I don't know why, but it was. But generally, well, if any grain offering was offered on an altar, it would be unleavened. But if it's first fruits, prohibition against using leaven in the grain offering, in the bread, was not required, was not enforced. Well, it was not promulgated. Exodus 23:19, you shall bring the choice first fruits of your soil. Well, if you took wheat or barley, made them into cake or put a sheaf, well, then you're not going to burn that on the altar. It's not burnt, because our verse here in Leviticus 2:12 says, they shall not ascend for a soothing aroma. What shall not ascend? Any offering of first fruits that you bring to the altar, to bring to the Lord. And of course, what the verse is talking about here is grain offerings. So all of these grain offerings in Leviticus 2 are burnt, or offerings that are burnt on the altar. It says not first fruits that are not grain offerings that are offered as a part of a first fruits offering. And I could go on and read some more stuff about first fruits, but there's plenty of it. We'll talk about that more later. First fruits, of course, are a type of Christ, 1 Corinthians 15:23, but each in his own order, Christ the first fruits, after that those who are Christ's at his coming. So the whole mass of redeemed humanity is compared to a wheat field, if you will, or a barley field. First fruits are offered to the priest, offered to God, and then the rest of the field, rest of the harvest is offered to God after that, likewise with us and the resurrection. Now, why is leaven prohibited? We've already mentioned three reasons why honey might be prohibited. Why leaven? Well, Adam Clark says, here's option number one. Adam Clark says that the leaven was prohibited because of its prohibition during the Passover. So if it was prohibited then, why not continue the prohibition later on? And remember, the Passover symbolism was they had to leave Egypt quickly. They didn't have time to leaven their bread. But I have a question. If the prohibition of leaven passed over from the Passover into the offerings, to the grain offering, why was leaven also not prohibited in the wave loaves of the peace offerings of the Feast of Harvest? So I'm not sure that's the reason why there was no leaven in the grain offerings. Second possibility as to why the leaven was prohibited in the grain offerings is because that fermentation was associated with corruption, and I think that's the main reason. Adam Clark says this. Jameson Fawcett and Brown point out that in the warm climates of the East, leavened bread soon spoils, and we don't want to have corruption associated with an offering that's given to God. That's the second reason that leaven was prohibited, probably. The third possible reason is that leaven was used in idolatrous rites, as Jameson Fawcett and Brown says, and therefore God wanted to separate out the Israelites from idolatry. So, for whatever reason, the bread was unleavened in the grain offering. We go down to Leviticus 2:13. Every grain offering of yours, moreover, you shall season with salt, so that the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings, you shall offer salt. Now, the NIV Study Bible points out that in ancient times, salt was often costly. It was a valuable part of the diet, and that's perhaps why it was used ritually, because it meant that the parties to a covenant were showing how much they were devoted to the covenant, because they were giving something valuable when they added salt to the covenant meal. So salt was a covenant sign. It was in a covenant meal. It was also used in sacrifices too, as we'll see later. Salt was added to a burnt offering, for example, in Ezekiel. We'll look at that in a minute. But salt is symbolic of a couple things. One is salt makes food taste good, so that symbolizes how the sacrifice was pleasant to God, as John Gill suggests. But also, and I think this is the main symbolism here, salt preserves from putrefaction. It preserves things. It symbolizes how the sacrifices preserve the life of the sinner. It also symbolizes the perpetuity of the covenant. It's the opposite of leaven, which symbolizes corruption, probably. So leaven is banned, but salt is required, because the idea is the covenant between God and his people is forever. In fact, this salt is linked with the salt of the covenant. Leviticus 2:13, you shall season with salt so that the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking. So there's a reference there to the salt that always accompanied covenant meals in the ancient Near East. Let's look at a related scripture in the New Testament, Mark 9, verses 49 through 50. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if the salt becomes unsalty, with what will you make it salty again? Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Well, there we're talking about the lack of corruption, but preservation and wholeness and completeness. Everyone will be salted. It says salted with fire. I assume that means that's the fire of purity, of refinement. Salt is associated with preservation, so it all goes together. Be preserved in your covenant relationship with me. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Now, in verse 13, it says at the end of the verse, with all your offerings, you shall offer salt. Now, what does that phrase, all your offerings, mean? Well, here's one option. It could mean those that were eaten and those that were not eaten. For example, the offerings to the priest, the grain offering that the priest offered for himself, that was not eaten. The whole thing went up into God. And so this verse here could mean, well, you put salt in that one too, as well as the ones that are eaten by the priest in the courtyard. Both are eaten. But, and the pulpit commentary says, no, it means all the major offerings were accompanied with salt. The burnt offering, the sin offering, the peace offering, and the trespass offering. We read in Ezekiel 43, verse 24, "You are to present them, a bull and a ram, before the Lord. The priest will throw salt on them and sacrifice them as a burnt offering to the Lord." So there, a burnt offering is accompanied with salt. And so you reason from that, you figure that all the offerings had salt. I think the pulpit commentary is probably right there. Because if you just say all your offerings, the uncooked and the cooked, well, that's a minor distinction. But he's making a big point here. All your offerings, not just cooked and uncooked, not cooked and uncooked, but offered completely God or partially offered to God, that's just a minor distinction compared to the distinction of all the different sacrifices. So all the sacrifices offered with salt, if our interpretation of that verse is correct. Salt's a good symbol. We go now to Leviticus chapter 2, verses 14 through 16. "Also, if you bring a grain offering of early ripened things to the Lord, you shall bring fresh heads of grain roasted in the fire, grits of new growth for the grain offering of your early ripened things." Early ripened means barley, because the barley harvest came in the spring, whereas the wheat harvest came in the early summer, and the figs and the grapes came in the fall. So early ripened means barley. "You shall then put oil on it and lay incense on it. It is a grain offering. The priest shall offer up and smoke its memorial portion, part of its grits and its oil, with all its incense as an offering by fire to the Lord." Now, when is this grain offering of barley offered? Well, it's not clear. Here's some options. First fruit offerings, the obligatory first fruit offerings at the festivals, at the Passover, at Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. They had to do first fruits at all three festivals. And so this verse here, according to this view, is saying that the grain offering that's offered is a barley offering. Or John Gill suggested this could be an ordinary free will offering when somebody wanted to make a grain offering to the Lord. If you had barley, this is how you do it with barley. And there seems to be a distinction here. This is how you do it with barley, whereas the first 12 verses seems like is how you do it with wheat. There's another option that John Gill suggested that this barley offering is referring to is the offering in Leviticus 23:13, which is offered on Nisan the 16th, the so-called Omer grain offering. We'll worry about that later when we get there, Leviticus 23. Well, whenever it was, nobody knows exactly, but we see that this is a barley grain offering, and that's why, since it's broken out here, that's why it makes me think the first 12 verses are talking about, the first 13 verses are talking about a wheat grain offering. Now, first of all, the buds of the grain, the fresh heads of the grain, they're roasted in the fire. They had to be roasted in order to ground them up. Otherwise, they'd be too green and moist to ground up into a powder. They just turn into a mash, a green mash. So they had to be roasted. And after the heads were roasted, they were ground into grits, is the word that the New American Standard Bible uses in verse 14. I like that word because I'm from the South. And never had barley grits, but I've had corn grits for most of my life until I married a wife from the North. She never hardly heard of grits, like most people in the world. It's really a shame. Think of grits. You mix it with bacon, country fried ham, sausage, butter running all over the place, put some eggs in it, salt and pepper it, mix it all up, and Lord have mercy, do you have a good meal. Full of carbohydrates, but it's still a great meal. But anyway, you put grits, the barley makes grits, and then you put oil on it, on the grits. I'm assuming the it means the grits. And then you put incense on top of the oil. There's your grain offering for barley. And then you burn it up. The memorial portion is burnt, I should say, and the rest of it is for the priest to eat. That's for the common offeror. If it's for the priest, he burns it all up. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 2 of Leviticus. That prepares us for our next adventure in Leviticus chapter 3, verses 1 through 17. We will look at the regulations for the peace offering, or the fellowship offering, as some people translate it. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.